Sterling Burnett, who is on the horn with us. Mr. Burnett, how are you, sir?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for giving us a bit of time to get your take on it. You know, it's received well here in Kentucky because we watched our government, under two different commander-in-chiefs, by the way, one bail out the financial sector with illegal activity, essentially, and give them money. Then we watch the automotive industry with bad deals they had made get bailed out from the federal government. Meanwhile, coal, which is a big part of eastern Kentucky, through no fault of their own, market forces and everything else, receive a kill shot from their commander-in-chief. And so finally, it looks as if somebody's taking care of the folks here in the heartland, and it's played well.
Well, yeah, and it should play well. It's not just good for Kentucky. It's not just good for West Virginia or Wyoming, because I do like coal mining there, or my home state of Texas. It's good for America. This is unshackling our domestic energy production. Coal is the most abundant energy source we have. We have about a 400-year supply, and we should be using it. It shouldn't be constrained by government fighting some mythical, distant, both in time and probably place, human-caused climate change.
The interesting thing, I watched the most ardent supporters of this Paris Accord that believe in the global warming theory, yet could not state a good reason for the United States to be part of it. It just is bad policy. It doesn't really change the dynamic. It still punishes the U.S.
They couldn't articulate an environmental benefit that would be provided by this treaty.
Right.
They couldn't articulate why the U.S., should be the U.S., who, by the way, has done more to reduce their emissions than any other country on earth, why they should be punished with forced restrictions on their fossil fuel use, while the largest emitting country in the world and the third largest emitting country in the world, China and India, do nothing to reduce their emissions. And in fact, we're supposed to pay them, we're supposed to give them billions of dollars while they continue to emit. So they couldn't show one environmental benefit, and there's a lot of economic harm. So it is just puzzling why they are such big defenders of this treaty.
Well, I think it goes beyond the actual so-called science. It's more about redistribution.
Well, it is. I mean, the treaty has always been an economic treaty, not an environmental treaty. If you read what in their most honest moments, people from the UN have said, Cristina Figueres, who was temporarily in charge of the UN's climate program and was second in command for a long time, she said, for the first time ever, we are consciously changing the world's economy. Governments are determining how, basically, people will live, how they will work. They believe, these bureaucrats believe, they're wise enough to know how everybody should live for now and for 100 years into the future. It's pure hubris.
Oh, yeah.
It does nothing for the environment.
You know, if I were trying to help the progressives out with their environmental policy, why in the world, instead of punishing the West, wouldn't they, in some sort of agreement, look at the worst offenders of carbon emission and slap tariffs on them to say, unless you change, we're not going to lower the tariff, and you won't be able to really compete? I mean, to me, that would make more sense to put the onus on those countries that are the offending ones, not try to lift them up. It doesn't make any sense.
But that's to assume that the progressives really care about the West and people. Instead, they're apologists for the dastardly things dictators in other countries do.
Yeah.
You see many progressives, you see many liberals in the last few years defending China, saying, well, in China they can get things done. Well, yeah, they execute people with bullets to the head by the hundreds. Right. They get things done. There's no question. Government mandates we shut off your internet, and we can force you to use whatever energy we want you to use. Is that what we want for America? Evidently, that's what they want for America. They'd like, they think democracy is messy, and you have to get people, you have to consult with people and get their approval, and yeah, they don't like that. They know how people ought to live.
I was watching with a lot of amusement the reaction, especially from some folks in the media, how this thing played out. And they must think that we have the shortest-term memories, because it wasn't that long ago with the claims that they have made about an apocalyptic future. You don't even have to go back 5-10 years for them to predict the end of the earth, whether it's New York is going to be underwater or Miami's going to be underwater or whatever, or giant storms are going to just bombard the coast of America. Yet none of this has happened, and they were making these predictions in, for 2008, 2012, and it's as if we've forgotten this, and they want us to accept their religion.
James Hansen, 5 different times, he used to run the National NASA's Climate Center. He predicted 5 different times, 5 different dates, that if we didn't do something drastic by X date, it would be too late. Well, we passed 5 of those dates, and it's too late, but somehow it's never too late.
Right.
You know, they're like Chicken Little, and just like Chicken Little, you can't trust them. But unlike Chicken Little, this isn't any more real than any of their other lies.
Yeah.
In the 70s, they were warning, the same people were warning of the coming ice age. They were writing about the coming ice age, the same people. And now they're telling, and their answer is always the same. We've got the ice age coming. We need more government and more control of your lives. Well, we got warming coming. We need more government and more control of your lives. No matter what the problem is, the answer is always bigger government and less personal freedom. That's their goal.
In all seriousness, how is that philosophy and mentality any different than a cult?
Well, it's not. It's truthfully more of a religion than science. Every time I hear, you got to follow the science. You got to follow the science. I don't know any other scientific discipline where they talk about consensus.
Right.
Consensus is a political term. Yeah. In science, they talk about truth and knowledge, but not in climate science. It's all about consensus.
Right.
I don't know any other scientific discipline that can put forward a theory that makes all sorts of projections and predictions, that every time, those predictions and projections are wrong, and rather than start to question the theory, they say, well, the theory's right, so the data must be wrong. No, the data's not wrong. The data is what it is.
Right.
It's your theory you start to question, but there's no other scientific theory where you don't go back and start to say, okay, well, we missed it about 100 times. Maybe we got the theory wrong.
It really is amazing. I mean, as if, you know, you had 100 idiots that suggested that Sir Isaac Newton is wrong about his theory of gravity, so we're going to go with the consensus. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. You would rely upon the empirical data that gives you your result.
That's, you know, that's why every time someone, it just infuriates me when they talk about this consensus. Look, at one time there was a consensus the world was flat. They didn't make it right.
Right.
They were wrong.
Right.
At one time there was a clear consensus. People believed, the world believed, scientists on the whole believed that the Earth was the center of the universe and the sun revolved around it. Their belief didn't mean a thing. They were wrong. Well, and not that long ago, I mean less than 200 years ago, they believed tumors in the body were what caused illnesses, and you just need to balance the bile and the blood.
Right.
They were wrong.
Yeah.
But that was the consensus.
You know, Mr. Burnett, I mean, honestly, to me, I have talked with enough of these guys in academia who really do not believe with the consensus, but they feel they're under such pressure to either receive monies vis-a-vis grants or not to be ostracized from their community, they have to go along with it.
Well, that's true, and it's really unfair, especially for the younger academics, the ones that haven't gotten tenure. But many academics, many scientists have spoken up, but only after they've gotten tenure or when they've retired and it can't hurt them anymore.
Right.
But younger academics don't have that advantage. And so what you see, and this is what's interesting in the academic journals, you see study after study showing one aspect or another of the climate theory wrong. So what about sea level rise? Well, 4 studies just in the last year said sea levels are not rising as fast as been predicted. They're rising at a lower rate than have risen on average for the past 18,000 years. There's no evidence of humans driving sea level rise. But they all have caveats. Mm-hmm. Which you don't see in any other academic discipline. They all have, so our study shows the data doesn't support the theory that humans are causing climate change. But that doesn't mean we're right.
Right.
I mean, they say, but you know, we could be wrong.
Yeah.
We're not saying humans are causing climate change. Don't get us wrong. So their data doesn't support it, but that doesn't mean, you know, that we're questioning the theory. I don't know any other area where if your research stands on its own and says this aspect of the theory is wrong, you don't come out and say, we think you're wrong.
We have
opposed to couching it in, well, that's what our data shows, but, you know, we're not going to argue against the theory.
I have been reading press releases from various captains of industries all throughout the United States that applaud what the president has done, whether they're through associations or they actually run a company. But the media, of course, has glommed on to Bob Iger and Elon Musk. But for my take, it appears as if Elon, of course, he's vested in that fossil fuel kind of go away with his number one moneymaker, if it's not actually making money yet. But so there's obvious reasons for these guys to be opposed.
It was always absurd for Elon Musk to be on, I think, Trump's technology and business council, because he doesn't make money off the market. He makes money off the government. He gets billions of dollars from government for his space stuff.
Right.
He gets billions of dollars from government in subsidies for his... He sells the most expensive cars made in America today,
mm-hmm.
and every one of those gets $6,000 or $8,000 subsidy. So rich people, because they're the only ones that can afford these cars, can buy these cars.
Right.
And we're supposed to trust him on climate policy because, as you say, he'd just as soon see Detroit shut down, but he'd have
right.
no competition.
Right.
And if you look at a lot of those, the list of companies who were so-called outraged, well, a lot of you see energy companies on there. So Shell,
mm-hmm.
well, Shell's a European company, and if you're in Europe and you're not on the climate change bandwagon,
right.
you're being punished by your government.
Right.
But Exxon was also on there. Well, guess what? Exxon sells a lot of natural gas, and if they put coal out of the business, they're better off.
Yeah.
Apple, you know, a lot of these tech companies. Well, guess what? They're not manufacturing here in the U.S. They're manufacturing in China, where there are no emission reduction right. targets. So they don't care what happens to the workers here in the U.S.
Right.
They're not affected.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's interesting the reactions that, you know, I don't know what if you're in Washington or not, but, you know, everywhere else in America, it played pretty well what the president did. And it was interesting because I knew that the overwhelming noise coming from the left, which has the biggest platform is through media and Hollywood, was going to be so negative that. And I knew he had to have that in his head. I didn't know if he would do the right thing or not, but he did yesterday. And the people here in the heartland are proud of him.
Well, you know, Trump has issues.
Yeah.
Let's be clear.
Yeah.
But you know what? He cares about America. He ran on putting America first. He is keeping his promises, unlike multiple other presidents in history who've made promises and then as soon as they were elected forgot those promises or said, yeah, but we've learned new things. Guess what? He came in, he took his time, he studied the issue, he looked at all the new evidence he got. Let's face it. Some people were saying, why aren't you getting out now? Why aren't you getting out now the day he became president? Well, you know why? Because it's a complicated matter, and there are a lot of things he didn't know because he wasn't president when he was candidate. Things that went on behind the scenes, things that the types of negotiations, the geopolitical implications. He had to get up to speed on these things, and he did. And he still kept his promise and made the right decision. Trump, the thing I admire about President Trump the most, whatever his failings, is that he was elected president of the United States of America, not the world, not head of the UN, not anything else but that. The Constitution is his guide, and the good of the American people is what he's striving for. And, God, who can fault him for that? Well, I'll tell you who. A lot of liberals on the left, a lot of the people in Hollywood
yeah.
who think that the United States is some aberration and we should bow to some greater world government or sing kumbaya and join hands with our enemies, like right. North Korea and Iran, as they try and kill us.
Right, and deserves to be punished for whatever illicit sins.
For
yeah,
success.
That's for success. That's right. H. Sterling Burnett, thank you, sir, for taking time and talking with us. We certainly do appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, and if I can ever be of any help again, please reach out.
Yeah, we'll do that. Again, H. Sterling Burnett, who's the research fellow at the Environment and Energy Policy for the Heartland Institute and also managing editor at Environment and Climate News. We'll pause here briefly.